Africa is not the probability, it's not the potential. It's been working and making money for many, many people for centuries. That's why we were colonized, because there was value to extract.
What is making you excited? Are there opportunities that people are not looking at, but you're like, people should really look into these things?
Yeah, so I think the biggest opportunity is the...
Ibrahim Sagna is the founder of Silverback Holdings, allocating capital across African technology, culture, sport, and entertainment, deciding which African ideas scale and which remain local.
You've led and been a part of 9 exits with Silverback Holdings, right? What has been you guys' thesis and your approach to getting exits with Silverback Holdings?
The secret sauce for us at two different vibes. So the first ladder, or the first axis, is what we call the axis of going from possible to probable to inevitable. So that axis is really the core of our structure, and we give 10% of our AUM to the fund managers, 9 for now.
Can you name some African companies that you feel like have done a good job of giving that a door?
Mono. The Mono deal just got announced. They got acquired by Flutterwave. I believe it was an all-stock deal for about $30 million, right? Can you demystify this whole all-stock deal acquisition?
That type of transaction is...
We see the tweets, and every single day what we see is we love Afropolitan. This podcast is underrated. This is the best podcast ever. But the problem is 82% of you are not subscribers, but I know you guys are watching. So I need you to click the subscribe button so you can join the Afropolitan family. Thank you.
Ibrahim, so someone's going to click on your specific video, and they may be winding down from a long day. They may be on their way to work, or maybe they're simply just taking a walk. So the first thing I want you to tell the Afropolitan audience is the opportunity to invest in Africa. Why does it still matter?
Chica, great to be here, to finally be here with you and my brother, yes. Eche. It's been long overdue.
Yep.
I'm just first delighted by that first question, because, you know, one of the superpowers you guys have is delightful questions. So I would say the first answer is it must be done, because Africa is not a probability. It's not a potential. It's been doing well. It's been working and making money for many, many people for centuries. That's why we were colonized, because there was value to extract.
Exactly.
If it was to not borrow the name of some government official, then capital, asset, and resources would not be extracted. In terms of the legacy we have in terms of value, the most visible one is obviously natural resource that continue to be extracted, whether it's oil. But human labor, has constituted an industry called slavery. And also, if you take a country like France, it extracts net income of 14 countries, 45% of their net income. Wow. That's capital extraction. So I think at the very macro level, you can see there's reason to invest.
Yeah.
Now, if governments do it, then people should do it. I would say that's the first fundamental reason why it must be done by others.
Mm. I actually like that answer. I feel like most people just say, oh, there's this thing and this opportunity. But the fact that you put it so plainly and said, well, the governments are doing it, so you might as well follow suit. Like, I actually really like how you frame it. I think the next conversation I want to lead into with that is, what is making you excited, right? Are there opportunities that maybe people are not looking at, but you're like, people should really look into these things?
Yeah, so I think the biggest opportunity is the core idea of the company we created, which is Silverback, where we decided to take a simple idea and take it extremely seriously. And that idea is, with the advent of technology, there is an unprecedented opportunity for a boy or girl that's doing something phenomenal at home to add similar value for someone in many other continents. And that is something that is a resounding idea we have been able to attract investors towards. We've been able to basically get local entrepreneurs to get the courage, audacity to start exporting their services in other people's home. Because when you open your Instagram, your Google, it's the same thing that has happened from an American boy.
Yeah. You've led and been a part of 9 exits with Silverback Holdings, right? But I know you're going to be making an announcement here as well where there's going to be a 10th exit.
Correct.
Right, with Mono.
Mono.
I want you to explain to our audience, what is Silverback Holding getting right? And I'm not saying, obviously, investors don't always get everything right. But what is has been you guys' thesis and your approach to getting exits with Silverback Holdings? So sorry for our audience, LemFi, Flutterwave, a who's who of like African tech ecosystem, but these are some of the exits that you guys have been a part of.
Yeah, so I think all of this started with, I think these are all still strikes of luck. It's true that we've had 10, but I think even when luck hits you, you need to be ready. So I think there's a lot of preparation for that luck to hit us. And I would say the secret sauce for us has been working at two different climbs. I'm going to use the image of climbing an axis. So those two axes are critical. We climb an axis with fund managers. So we back Kings so far 9 funds since we started this, because this journey started because as myself and the other partners, we're angels working with fund managers. And working with them, we discovered talent. And then that's that journey that we were doing at the, our night job that became our day job. That's how the transition went from working for a large DFI like AfriXim that was managing $37 billion, safe job, doing everything you can wish, meeting president, having an agenda on the continent, to basically seeing that there's something super exciting here. So the first ladder or the first axis is what we call the axis of going from possible to probable to inevitable. So we believe that the fund managers expose us to all the possibilities. So in the continent since 2016, there's been 1,350 and change companies that raise over $100,000. So through these 9 managers, we've been exposed to 264 companies. So it's almost 25% shy of that number. But as we add fund managers, you will be able to basically get exposure to 20 to 25% of the market. So they are the hunters of possibilities. I'm 50. I don't have the energy. I'm happy to be a farmer.
Yeah.
So are my team. We're pretty much veterans. I'm actually part of the youth in my team. The members in of Silverbacks are over 60. So another good chunk is under 50. But our average age is definitely over 40 plus. I would say that our media team is actually the cool kids going from 20 to 35. But everybody on the investment side is much older. So to go from that possibility tranche, then we give money to those fund managers and we evolve to a tranche that we call the probable tranche, where that's how we invested in Mono and all these 9 exits. Is basically over time when these guys invested in these companies, Flutterwave, they had invested in 2017. So by 2018, 19, it was clear that something was happening with GB. So it's SPVs start coming out. So the SPVs kind of give you an opportunity to kind of just focus your additional money on Flutterwave alone, your additional money on Move alone, your additional money on CUDA alone, on OmniRetail. Just so that passage from possible to probable is where we put additional and a lot more money. Now there's a next level to the access, which is inevitable. So when we just see that the company is really becoming just in terms of revenue growth, in terms of the acceleration of collecting investors on the cap table, in terms of direction towards profitability. But we had something that we really started loving, which is these companies trying to go outside of Africa. Mm-hmm. And as you know, you guys being diaspora like myself, there was an army of those companies. So we could see that that small tranche of unique companies that were inevitable because they had already successfully conquered the continent and now have the audacity to conquer foreign countries. It seems to be something in fashion these days. We thought that it was important to pay attention to it and track that. So that access of going from probable to inevitable is really the core of our structure. And we give 10% of our AUM to the fund managers, 9 for now. Now, what we do is we leave 70% solely for the inevitable. And in the middle, there's going to be some probability play. And in technologies, there's a lot of fund managers. But as you know, we cover other sectors where there's not managers who can be the hunters, while we can be farming. So that access, for us, is the farming exercise. And it's where we're able to, as it grows, recover the face value of our investment. That's where the gap has been. I mean, our lowest return has been 1.3 times cash with a gaming company in France, actually, called Dual Universe. And then it stacks up to 3.7 with CUDA. Then gets to 5 times with Omni Retail, 5.1 with Move, 9.7 with a company called Casabana, 24 times with Flutterwave, and 29 being LemFi. But as those exit exercises happen and we give money back to the initial investors, most of them, and most of our investors are a lot of them Middle Eastern, so there's not necessarily alignment. There's a lot of things they can do at home to make money. But for us, it was very important to let them see profit from investing in Africa. Because obviously that question is always in people's mind. And to convince anybody, I think money is a convincing tool.
Yeah.
They're not doing it for the reason we're doing it. For us, it was very important for them to see liquidity in a timely manner. So we have a committee internally who at any given point is like, Oga, where are we getting money from? Where are we paying people back? So that they can be our agency. We have no investor relationship. Most funds have a few people that are just doing that. We believe our investors are the one that have to evangelize. And we're just giving them with engineering bragging rights for them to actually go, I've invested in Africa. From where they are, whether it's European investors or Middle Eastern investors, I'm sure people will be like, how are you making money in that scary looking place? And I think that's been the funnel. It has created next level. So I would say that approach has been the biggest key to success, but that's just one axis. So the other axis is what we do internally, like we basically believe that once we find the inevitable, fits with another axis that we call the axis of working with operators from them being disliked to being liked to being loved and then being adored. So that axis is from likable to adorable. And the difference, those words are not usually studied carefully, but love as a term is not about attraction of attributes. That's actually liking. When you like someone or a product, you're attracted to their attribute, boy, girl, product. Love is actually tolerance of defects. That's family, spouse, brother, siblings. It's basically, you know the person, I take you as you are. I accept you as a whole. So it's actually an emphasis on your inconveniences. The level up is adoration. is where it's no longer about attribute or defects. It's actually about self-identification. That's religion, sports, fashion,
music,
brand, where you've decided that this is me. There's nothing you can explain. Most religions are the same. That'll be bomb, killing another person, and you'll find an excuse to make it make sense because it's unmarrying yourself with you. Yeah. That is the highest level of stickiness. You know, in school, in business school, we learn about business stickiness. We think that's the highest point of stickiness. And we think that in the tech space, the biggest manifestation of that is Apple.
Yeah.
Like a lot of us have Apple phone.
Yeah.
The phone has Wahala plenty, but we will be swearing by it. And in fact, it works like, if you think about Apple, it works like a compound. You elect to close yourself from the rest of the world. You decide to be a hostage to that situation because you feel elite in it. And you cannot explain it. Even if the other space has better, you're happy with it. And if someone attacks your brand, you take it personally. And also other brands, if the studies for Samsung showing that Samsung owners get annoyed at the Apple. But the Apple people don't care about the Samsung people. So all that is storytelling when you think about it. So we think that our duty on the other axe is to extract those inevitable and likable companies and spend the time around our media assets and partners like yourself to elevate the story so they can graduate from lovable to adorable. Because once people espouse your story, identify with you, it's become more difficult to instruct the separation.
Yeah.
Etcher, remember that time I walked into a bank, I'm not going to give the name, and I asked them for $1,000 and they told me no, they cannot withdraw any dollar for me. And I was so upset. And I just remember asking everybody, how can I solve this issue? And I'm so happy that I finally have V-Band to finally solve this issue for me.
You know, the thing is, you should be able to have access to your money anywhere in the world when you get paid, right? So I'm grateful we have VBAN as a sponsor for the Afropolitan podcast. With VBAN, you're able to get paid in foreign currencies, whether it's pounds, USD, euros, and you can actually spend it in local currency as well. Now, you're also able to get a virtual card, which you can use to spend in and pay for services across the world, right? So I'm grateful to have VBAN as a sponsor.
You can download it on the Apple or Google Play Store. And remember, when you sign up, you use Afropolitan so they know you came from this podcast.
I was telling someone that I feel like the greatest startups in the world are religions, right?
Yeah. If you Correct.
Think about it, start in places and billions of users or billions of believers.
Many billions.
Believers.
Over the time of our life.
Over time, right? And it has stayed the course of time. But I want you, for our audience's sake, because obviously we know the inner workings of when you say 24X, 3X. I believe I was reading something from Sam Altman last year where he said he's come to believe that time and market is the last arbitrage left. And I think his point was, you know, there are companies like SoftBank, mm-hmm. who obviously were early investors in NVIDIA, mm-hmm. they had held long-term, like returns that fund like multiple times over, right?
Yeah.
Now, everything is better in hindsight, right?
Yes.
Now, with your thesis, and I completely understand the thesis, you're saying liquidity in of itself is a storytelling mechanism, and you have those investors who've invested now go out there to be agents for Silverback Holdings, but mostly African investments in general.
Correct.
Now, for our audience's sake, could you explain, like, let's take a LemFi, for example, or maybe even a Move or any other companies that you've exited from. I don't think you've exited from Move yet, but other companies you've exited from. How does it actually work? So LemFi announces a $53 million Series B raise, and Silverback is already on the cap table. Do you dilute your entire shares? Do you sell a part of your shares? How does it work for our users who are like, I want to understand how this actually works because you're exiting at Series B, whereas most of these companies or investors sometimes prefer to wait till an acquisition or an IPO or a merger and acquisition. So just to give the inner workings of what that actually looks like.
Sure. So I think all those names you've given, LemFi, CUDA, and all of them were still there. But I think the example that we're the proudest of is Move.
Move, okay.
So Move is a company where we invested as few angels, but probably our entire ticket size collectively was $750,000.
At seed?
At seed. Wow. The valuation was $65 million.
At seed?
This was one of the... This was round A plus.
Okay.
Pre-A.
Okay.
So post round, I think it landed at 85 or something like that. So then it did a round at 200, then a round at 300. Then the last round with liquidity injection was Uber coming in at 750. So between that, when it hit 750
million dollars.
Yeah, make it clear. Not 750,000 naira. Dollar.
When the $750 million hit, we basically did two things at the same time before it hit that number. We took some people out. It was already at that juncture. There was a room for people to make over 4x. And as we are removing some people, think almost, take the image of a classroom with a set amount of seats and one teacher being the founder. Our rule in general, we don't want this founder to see us, all the students leaving the class. We actually want the founder to see more students asking for more chairs. So that's what's happening. So there's people leaving, but as these people are leaving, we raising our hand to the founder, say, by the way, oh yeah, I want more chairs. If I cannot get it from the founder, I call my fund managers who are exposed and I buy it from them. So our funds like us because we have 3 points of getting liked. First, we give them a first check. Second, we co-invest with them. But then if there's something we really adore, then we come to you like, oh yeah, I'm going to buy it off you. So it creates DPI for them. So out of the 9, we've given to DPI to 4 of them. We bought a position fully from them. And in fact, if we like a name sufficiently enough, we may buy your entire exposure or your SPV. So that's how we've, with the case of Move, the initial story was 750 check. There's been exit, but today our overall standing in Move is close to $40 million. So because that's a company we've got in when there was 7 cars, that those 2 Nigerian British guys were shipping onto Uber system.
And wait, can you explain what Move is for those who don't know that company?
Sure, sure. I think Move is very misunderstood by the community. Move has always been viewed as a founder that created a solution for the gig economy drivers. It is a byproduct of their solution. But the crust of the solution was solving a problem for Uber, which is any given day one of the 300 most capitalized company in the globe. So imagine you're sitting in London, there's a problem in Lagos, but the problem you're solving is for one of 200 best credits in the globe. And how those guys are super ingenious. Each of them, this is their third entrepreneur iteration. So that's to us has become from all the data we've been able to oversee the single biggest signal for success is a second act. What do you call a second act? Someone must have had a first act before and have done fairly okay. And do a full pivot, a full spin-off. And when they did this, they actually pitched to Uber while they were running a successful business. You know, JC Desso that you find in Europe or in airport, they were the Africa. That. Yeah. So they were the one doing it here in Nigeria and across many African countries. Okay. So they were like pitching for that. And Uber told them about their problem. Mm. And they came to the solution that clearly billboards are not going to solve your problem. Their problem was when they use cars in US, Europe, customers are typically 4 to 7 times happier in terms of surveys than their experience in Nigeria or other parts. And the common feedback was often not necessarily about the driver, but it was about the car. And as you know, a lot of times you'll open your Uber app, whether you're here in some place in the Middle East, you ask for comfort or top of the line and the car arrives, you're like, oh yeah, I'm going to walk.
Yep.
I don't want to call any brands, man. But then
drop me way before the arrival point because I don't want to be seen. Right, all that is just too much gymnastics. So these guys came up with a great solution. They're like, all of you operators like Uber, Airbnb, you are dating apps. Because when you think about it, they're all dating apps. They're just matching someone ambulant and someone is a car. Boom. Yep. Marry up for a few minutes. Airbnb the same. So they basically told them, in this case, it's pretty much of a threesome. You need to separate the guy and the car and bring the three parties. We will handle that car, top of the line, and you need to give us access into your data and your selection so that we match your top quality driver with the car he deserves so he can remove the problem out of the equation. So that is fundamentally what they became, which is when you think about it, it's AI before AI. It was matching good behavior with good asset. So that matching principle was very powerful because even if you're in a country like Nigeria or India, South Africa with all its issue, whether it's currency, whatever, what you are holding is a pretty defensive asset, which is a car. So when you have cars, you know, they pretty much, whether you're in Nigeria or not, it's a kind of pegged to international currency asset. Especially if there's someone that promises that they will buy it from you. So the deal in most cases is we get this supply of cars and we push it into your best drivers. Your drivers pay us over time. But because the party that allows you to push the cars into the system are not the driver, it's actually the employer. If the driver start doing 419, just call his boss. Like, oh yeah, this guy Adeyemi, this guy Emeka, this guy Ibrahim, I beg. So Uber can simply take the car from Emeka and give it to Adeyemi. So the risk, so for us, we saw very early that the level of risk when you embed your business performance in such a high credit customer and global customer, you just have to perform. Each time you perform, he will give you more work. And that customer was everywhere. So that became really the flywheel under which Move expanded. And after that, added Bolt. And us, we were invested in a few of those. We were invested in Swivel. So we introduced them to some of our portfolio company. A couple of them became deals. So that's revenue for them. We're not a broker. We're actually a portfolio manager. If you guys can find a way to do a deal, mashallah. So, but now that operator, to go back to the initial story, when they had seven, when we came in, seven cars, today they have 40,000 cars. Their revenue was 7 million when we came in. Their revenue is like flirting with, is well over $300 million. So just think about that journey all in 6 years, what we can see. So obviously, from the pyramid where we are, we see a lot of things because all the our friends fund managers work with expose us to almost 300 companies. So you can clearly see a student and a student. You can see a rock star and a laggard. So for us, we could clearly see the ascendance and the protection they were getting because that company was growing on the back of, doesn't need to grow on too many companies. You just have a very solid company. Uber was the armor. Then it became Bolt, Grab. At some point, they had Swivel. And now they've added Waymo. And the definition of Waymo is Google. It's one of the most present customer of what we call Magnificent Seven. If your job is to service that guy, that's a very good client and boss to have for your journey. So for that, we think that so that 750 has become 40 million. So for us, it's a crisp manifestation of climbing that emotion ladder that I gave you. which is we think these guys, we like them. Wow, we love them. Now we're like, and that expansion, that emancipation, now I would argue Africa is not anymore the largest side of the business. It's actually a number we know, but that number would surprise you. So they've become so dominant in other markets. Like Brazil, they have the biggest player in the entire country. And they're also in Japan. Mm. But they also are probably the biggest player.
Global company.
It's fully global. And also in the US, they're the one expanding Waymo in Miami, in Phoenix, and London. They'll be the only one doing it in London. So just try to frame that in the mind that these two Nigerian, British, basically as those cars get laid out across the city, that entity called Google is going to use them to lay out the service of these driverless cars. And they will be the main party doing it. And as long as you perform, they'll just give you more work. Yes. And that work is all paid in foreign currency.
Well, you know, I like this analogy you give, right, of a brand specifically moving, you know, from this kind of like all the way to door. Can you name some African companies that you feel like have done a good job of giving that a door? Or is it just sit at religion?
No, I think there's a few brands on the continent that are doing a good job. I think when you think about the work, I think a few of them have managed to reach like to love. Adore has been limited. But I think if you think about MTN, everywhere you want to be, that yellow is encrusted in you wherever you go. You know, you go to other countries, a lot of people land in other countries. Do you have MTN here? That says a lot about the mental damage it has done for you. Because you assume that you arrive in an African country, the brand that deserving of you is that brand.
Yeah.
I would argue Airtel is a lot more present. And, you know, Airtel has done, I would argue in many places, Airtel is better. But MTN has done that job. And that is done, as you know, as a brand person, by association. Because the events MTN sponsors are not any event. So it's all about where you get seen.
Mind sharing.
So basically, I would argue that the power of being at that level is who is your crew. Right? Because basically, when you think about religion, each of them picked a prophet that was a talent that did a set of things. And that set of things is what transpired thousands of years later. Although we're not seeing, none of us have material seeing those things, but that set of action. So I think these brands like MTN that have done a phenomenal job at that level on the continent, I can think of others. I would say on the music side, locally, I would argue that Maven has done a great job. If you think about it, they could have just been a mom and pop shop getting singers, but they've really done a certain set of step. I mean, because it was that pre the bunch.
Yeah.
And all of us who were there at the time consuming avidly, we saw the bunch as the core essential element. But once he separated, he's like, you know what? If I've managed to do it with you, I can do it with many at scale, industrially, and then associating himself with top brand. I mean, he had TPG. TPG is one of the top 10 private equity firm in the globe. To go from making music in Lagos to land at that guy being in your cap table, that's a journey. And then it's not random that out of all the Nigerian singers we know, you have one of his singers called Calm that makes Calm Down, and that song is being sung with Indian singers and at the time the biggest singer in the US of A.
Yeah.
So I would say that there's a few action, there's a bit of input you need to kind of engineer to get that output. I don't think any of those things are accidental.
Mm. And then I want to switch to, because you've also done some interesting, whether it's, you know, investing or building around culture, right? So one of the things I want to talk about was like Forever 7 went to number one in Nigeria. Like, what made you get part of those type of projects, especially coming from your background? Was there something you saw, maybe your time at FXM, or maybe just in general, some notes you saw around investing in culture and sports?
So I always thought that African culture was often borrowed without the right tax payment. That's permanent. So for me, I think I have an inner bias that I think can distort my objectivity. But I do believe it's anchored in me that it's impossible that the story of Africa started with colonization and slavery. And then you give me like a blurry TV series about the Moors dominating Europe. But I have no data there. But when it's about slavery and colonization, I have libraries.
Yeah.
So I think something in the depiction of our entire timeline is off.
Yeah.
And if you take even in the bad perception of our brand, which is slavery and colonization and messed up countries, even with that thematic cover, there was accepting that whether it's music on their side, whether it's hip hop, whether it's art, whether it's sports, it's always us. So that's despite the thematic cover. So there's already an acceptance that you like to export our culture. So that acceptance has always been there. So what I would argue is if there was not a thematic, how much is really extracted towards export? Mm. I would argue that culture, natural resource, and money. For me, I always point to the fact that I come from Senegal. The Francophone countries are positioned as a subsidiary of France. In the meantime, they're the LP. France is a GP that's getting money from people, but he's not calling them boss. He's calling them servant. That's fundamentally what France has done. So I think there's different tactical move parties do, but the value of exporting culture we've always had. So for me, working at African Bank, running the investment bank side, I would say that that's probably the institution that was more outspoken about making Africa culture and global Africa, including the Caribbean, merged. So I think here in Nigeria was BOI. So we worked a lot and got very inspired by the work
they were doing.
Bank of Industries. Because they were one of the first to really venture in that space. I would say they're probably an unspoken leader in their actions. So when I wanted to do movies, being humble enough to know that, okay, you've just been a finance geek and business person your whole life, this is a territory you don't know. I started with a couple of members of my team to see what can we borrow from what we were doing well in tech. Because the tech was already working. We were not communicating yet. So we thought that we needed to find someone that could demonstrate, you know, going from that possible to probable to inevitable. That was hard to tell because there's so many movie producers in Nigeria. We know them, we see them, we see their movie. A lot of time you don't know the numbers, so the gymnastic of knowing the numbers. But we got lucky because during COVID, there was this lady that owned Bistro 7, and her brother was at YPO with me.
Oh, Bistro 7.
Yes. And she sold Bistro 7 to MI. So that's already a first act of an entrepreneur trying to do something. And also, there's a rebel sign because she comes from a very established family in Nigeria
that moved from India. They have a family business, but she decided to go into restaurant and now wanted to do a movie. She does that movie, Namaste Wahala. And it's a super hit. Everybody knows it. And then Namaste Wahala for us was the biggest data point we needed to basically see that that passage from possible to probable. And Postcard was a second movie, was the same idea. So the question is, could that probable, if you do it twice, for us, it'd be inevitable. Why? Because she was in what we call in tech, she was onto a secret and she had built a monopoly. She was the only person making romantic comedies between black and brown people. And not any black and brown people. Mm. The largest population on earth of black people, which is Nigeria, and the largest population of brown people, which is India. So when we all talk about total addressable market,
it's like the full pie.
That was like a 1.6 billion. That's without the diaspora of each of those countries. Yeah. Mm. And then we looked around, there's nobody else that was doing such movie except one person. The mother of Mamdani had done a movie between Denzel
and Mamdani. Yeah,
yes, that's what she had done like 30 plus years, and nobody has explored that gender since. So for us, the way we are looking at her as a producer is pretty much as a fund manager that's just going to double and triple into that single secret. So she's done Namaste Wahala was one movie, Postcards is a series, but she owns the IP of each of those. So Netflix sits on it 3 to 5 years after they give it back to you and you can do a number two. Mm. So if you are averse with fund managers, they have a fund one, fund two, fund three. For us, each of these movies is like fund one, fund two. When she gets back the rights, she can do fund two, we can show up again and just do sequel. And we studied the fact that romantic comedies are probably the most successful genre globally.
Yeah.
And then if you can have a fruitful IP, you can explore two or three episodes. Now she's doing a cartoon. But the cartoon's roughly same concept. There's a Indian and Nigerian school here in Lagos. So, and in that school, because it's an international school, there's some Chinese, there's some European. But it's real about culture. Mm. So we felt that if we wanted to explore culture, we still wanted to stay within our common theme, which is Africa to the world. So she allowed us to do that in a nimble fashion. So we keep on looking for other producers that can allow us to do the same. So some of the ideas could be Nigerians and another culture. But around marriage, when you think about it, marriage of people from different cultures, different religion has always been a problem. Myself, as a Senegalese Muslim, married to a Nigerian Igbo Christian, you can only imagine how that investment committee was complex. And that those stories always sell.
Yeah.
They always, because there's a lot of challenge. And think about the storytelling, the challenge, the underdog, not possible until it's made possible. So, and the differences, if you involve big diaspora, big community, can be very interesting outcomes.
You know, we had Austin Averu on the Afropolitan Live, and he had talked about, you know, he spent about 20 plus years in like between NMPC and another private sector company before he embarked on his entrepreneurial journey. And it's almost similar to you. You spent like almost 26 plus years at institutions. I want to focus primarily on AfriExim because I do think we had Andrea Lee, who was former CEO of AFC.
Actually, he was my boss at AFC.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. And so he demystified what AFC does, right? Mm. I would love your help demystifying what AfriExim does, especially for people who are always hearing about AfriExim Bank. I think they just provided loans to a couple of...
Yeah, the last three deals you've heard on the news are all AfriExim.
Tony Lumelu, Seplat Energy, Garagu.
Dangote.
So what does AfriExim do? What was your role like over there? And how did that role help shape your transition to Silverback Holdings as well?
So Andrew and I go back first, like 30 years. So when we were in our early 20s, when he was at IFC, I was managing a IFC fund called EMP. I was both young in our careers. And obviously, my wife being Nigerian, wanting to go back to Nigeria, AFC being here, you can see the confluence of events to lead us to AFC. But fundamentally, whether it's AFC that probably is probably around 15 billion AUM or below, and Afrexim that now is probably under 45, around that number, the two of them are 70 billion under management. They both fall into a family called development finance institutions.
DFIs.
Yeah. So the DFIs are basically when many governments get together and combine their pools and say, we're going to do something that will help all of us. So Africa being heavily fragmented, and I would argue maybe not accidentally, because when you think about colonization as a technology, it had five people. So when they left, there should have been five countries. We ended up being 54. Well, there was not 54 empires before they came. So
that's a whole nother thing. So
some serious fragmentation happened. So now when we want to do big infrastructure projects, those vehicles end up being ideal vehicles to basically do large project. So the two entities are different in terms of their goal. So I will first address AFC, because that's where I went first. So, and I was familiar with DFIs because I had started my career after Merrill Lynch at the IMF. So working in multilateral organization is a mix of understanding business, being a technocrat, but also politics, because it's your shareholders and your stakeholders are usually countries, whether on the disbursement side or on the contribution side. So it's like what the founder does, but actually instead of getting money from people or company, you're getting it from government and you have to put the money back in government. So with AFC, AFC was a reaction to the ADB, which was probably still the largest development bank on the continent on a Pan-African basis, was to get a, was the largest shareholder was Nigeria. And then Nigeria was expecting to get the role. They didn't get it. So the country, probably one of the most amazing capital raise of my time, the government say, forget these guys, we're going to do our own.
This is Nigeria.
In Nigeria. We're going to do AFC. And AFC was put together by the central bank, the government, forcing all the banks to put $1 billion of cash in a bank account.
Collectively.
Okay. And this is Nigerian banks?
Nigerian bank. Only Nigerian. This is AFC is a fully started Nigerian effort. So imagine at that time to go to different banks and say, billion. All the dollars. And there was no staff. So imagine a bank, all the entrepreneurs trying to raise money. The money was raised and the staff came after. So that's Nigerian reaction. Don't upset the Nigerian. So that organization did phenomenal well because over time, now the from that initial situation, the guy that was there before, Andrew, the one thing that was, you know, there was a lot of big goals before because you're trying to be another AFDB is a big mission. But I think the good thing the team over time did with the contribution of Andrew and now Samaila is to concentrate that mission around infrastructure only. And, you know, the in the beginning, it had a very multiplicity of objective. But I think with the restriction of the goal around infrastructure,
focus,
it allowed precision. And also it allows any employee, any executive to not try to be tequila. It's very difficult to make everybody happy. But if you decide that I'm going to be a juice, not alcoholic, or I'm going to do alcohol, I want to be strong, you tend to concentrate your efforts. So I think AFC very fast became a dominant force in terms of getting money from either banks or countries, because obviously in Nigeria, the banks kind of provided the bulk of the check under the instruction of CBN. But then in different countries, you go find a different entity to provide that money. And then companies in that countries can become shareholders. But the goal of AFC was always provide capital to infrastructure project, first in Nigeria, then across the continent. That mission has done well. Afrexim is a company, a firm, a DFI that was created around trade finance. Okay. It was also a reaction. Afrexim was created by a Senegalese gentleman that used to be the president of AFDB at the time. So AFDB was same concept, different African country control it. But there's aspect of the AFDB that gives a big voice to non-African entities. So when it was created, the key rule was to take critical vertical of Africa Development Bank and create a subsidiary around it. So Afrexim was really a subsidiary for trade finance.
Specifically.
And there's many companies like Afrexim that exist on the continent. People don't realize. There's a company called Shelter Afric.
Shelter
Afric. And Africa. It's created for real estate.
Yeah.
There's a company you've heard about called Africa 50 for infrastructure. There is, let me try to think of a couple of more.
Are these all subsidiaries of
all these are ADB subsidiary created, but some of them now are becoming half the size. So I would argue that Afrexim as a child has become a...
Uncle.
I'm curious, is there any for like that for media and creativity?
No, not yet. But I would argue that, you know, that's what the ADB has been doing. But the key point around this giving birth is that the guy that put it together was concerned that control was not in African hands. So what's very important in each of them in their constitution, when you take Afrexim, there's an embedded rule that African countries must be the dominant voting force. Like, it's embedded in the charter. You can take money from anywhere, but there's not going to be a time where a foreign-based entity can influence the end decision. Because at Topco, it's not always the case. So all these by design are supposed to be a better African DFI. Not to say that the parent is bad, but these were architected for solution. So Afrexim, to answer your question, was really around trade finance. So it started around providing trade line and then progressively started doing infrastructure. Because, you know, as you do trade, you kind of reverse into the supply chain. That's how Dangote started. He was just doing trade. But today he has refinery. Is whether you think about sugar, whether you think about cement, the factory itself. Because if you don't reverse integrate, and that's our biggest problem, is that we don't refine. Mm-hmm. The lack of refining has been permanently the biggest
issue
across the continent. Because whether it's chocolate, whether it's a sports person, a singer, you can have all the talent in the raw form. But the distribution and the refining machine is where the value sits. That's why, you know, there'll be some music where people just see who had more talent between Biggie and Puff Daddy. Who's more famous and who's making more money?
Well, the problem is Biggie had more talent, but Puff Daddy's more
had the
rich.
Distribution machine. No, but the distribution. He was the label.
Yeah. He was the distribution.
So the point there is, it's the real value always sit at the distribution point. Mm. And I think
it's
as Africa,
captured there.
As where it's all concentrated.
Well, you know what? Okay, I'm glad you went here.
Because I'm always saying to her, distribution.
Yeah, I'm glad you were here. So, I have two ways to go about this. I want to talk about it from like a practical trade perspective. But I do want to talk about media too. So interestingly, last night I was having a dinner with my girls. And, you know, I'm kind of at the age where I'm like, look, we got to talk about money. Like, let's start talking about how we're making money. Let's start talking about these things. And so one of my friends also has been in finance, and she was talking about this same issue. So she was saying specifically there's these like sesame seeds, and she's like, you know, I'm from Toronto and it's everywhere. She's like, you just go around and you just see them in the wind, you know? And she was saying she knows of a company that is Asian that's in Nigeria, and all they do is they like heat the sesame seeds in these tumblers and they export it to different countries around the world, and they're making millions. And so she was just urging us to look at, you know, if we're looking at agriculture or other things, to refine it. And so I'm trying to understand, why are we not in that game? Like, why is it that, you know, an Asian company could come to a state in Nigeria and see the opportunity and focus on that, and we for some reason are not focused on that?
Well, I think, you know, the toughest thing in life is figure out what's the noise and what's real. So today you have a gentleman called Aliko Dangote that's simply trying to put the refinery and ship that oil to Yankee or Europe. You guys are in the country reading all the stories around it. And the stories are not the Yankees or the, at least in the visible. It's actually
us.
His sibling. Yeah. Saying, he wants to control more. He wants to have more. The fact is, you're going to stop your cousin from doing that plant so that you take it from someone you don't know. So that's where we've been. That's been the movie of our life. Every time that someone tries to solve that problem, instead of letting that problem be solved, most of us do what's happening in this movie that we're all watching. He's saying, it's fine, I'm going to make money, but this is a problem to us all. But we can't even agree at that level. You see the amount of gymnastic that has been. I mean, for 30 years, I've only seen those situations. Every time that reflex comes, there's just bizarrely. And a lot of times it's not even a natural African problem. A lot of times it's engineered, right? Because you can imagine the amount of money that all the IOCs from the West are making
here.
Imagine if Aliko is saying, I'm going to take all that revenue. And the heads are falling in London, in America. They're like, what do you mean? This is like 20% of my money. Why you want to take it? Who are you? This is what my ancestors have been doing. So there's a lot of that has to happen at multiple industries.
And sectors.
Multiple sectors. Because a lot of times, if you don't control the distribution, you lose the story.
Mm-hmm.
Think about how many people should be going to go visit the places where the Christ was born. They go to Italy. A country he never went to.
Well, always at the Vatican.
That's distribution,
yeah,
and talent,
and storytelling,
So it's the same archetype. You need to control the distribution, else things will happen that look normal, but are very strange.
It reminds me of, like, obviously you and I are huge fans of the philosophy of Naval. And I was just thinking, as you explained it to Chika, we've not really done a good job of explaining to maybe Africans in general why capitalism, socialism, communism, because I believe in ethical wealth creation, which is possible through capitalism, while still holding capitalists accountable to the things that they do. And I remember the singular line I read in the Naval book was, society will reward you for giving it what it wants, but does not yet know how to get.
Yes.
So how is that broken down simply? Hey, here's a pain point. I will take radical responsibility in fixing it. If I fix it, you guys will give me money for it. And I won't get all the money, but I'll get like maybe 5%, 10%. Is that okay? Yes. Everybody, yes. Good. And I think once I understood it from that simplistic perspective, you're like, why aren't more people doing going into that? It? But then to your point, I don't know if it's a cultural thing, if it's been engineered. I think there's this perception like, well, why you between ourselves? And then when an Asian or whoever else comes in, we're like, oh, that's fine because we don't associate or we don't tie that. It's the same capitalist bend, you know? So thank you for giving us that breakdown.
Humans. No, still one of my, I would say, you know, Naval is, we've discussed in zillion times, favorite book, favorite thinker at this stage. Because I think there's few people that do a phenomenal job prior to LLM and Google.
Breaking down
all the knowledge in the past. Like I think Naval is one of them. Yuval Hariri is one of them. Robert, the guy that wrote 48 Laws of Power.
Yeah, Robert Greene. Yeah, The Art of Seduction.
Guys, they just go and just, you could call it stealing, borrowing, but they just go into the past, find the best gems, and bring it to us. And those are heroes. And once you have that gem, you inherit like 5,000 years of knowledge. And for him, I would say to Naval, the biggest quote that infected my life was one he borrowed from Buddha, which is every human has only two lives. And the second one starts when you realize that you only have one. Mm. And that's from Buddha. So he's really brought it back up in our era. And that sentence was just resounding in me. I mean, when really the decision of creating Silverback came through, because I was in Dubai. So I almost died of COVID.
Oh, wow.
So this was 2020. The airport had opened in Cairo, where I was. My family was here in Nigeria. We had not seen each other for 8 months. Then we went to the US, went to Senegal to see our parents. My parents I had not seen for almost 10 months. And then got tested negative for COVID as you leave. And Dubai back then was open. But they're like, I don't care where you've got your test. As you land, though, I'm testing you. So as I went, my family was going back to Cairo. I was going to Dubai because that's where I do my annual medical check. So I'm going to do a one-day stopover to go see my doctor and fly back. I get out the plane, go do my medical checkup. Get the SMS.
Positive. Oh, yeah,
you're not leaving. Go to that hotel, sit there. So, you know, I was reading all these things about COVID, blah, 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 people think. So, you know, mentally but you don't feel it. But you get tired. I was taking all the medication. I have a lot of friends. I'm a Dubai resident. So a lot of friends were bringing me medication to my hotel. I was following them. But on the fifth day, criteria is when I have COVID, I sleep 20 out of the 24 hours of the day. So medicine is only a few hours. Most of the time, you're not curing yourself. So by the fifth day, I could not leave my bed to go to the bathroom in the hotel room. Like, it took me like an hour and a half. I was planning to go.
Oh, my God.
So then I look at the time, but the planning to go is literally like your life in slow motion, because you're looking at the door, you're having like strategy meetings, which leg do you move first, what would be the cost-effective way to go there, and then next thing you look at your watch, it's been 90 minutes, you're like, this is bizarre, I cannot find energy to lift, I'm still thinking. So then I call my friend, he's like, listen, I think you're not realizing, but you're probably running out of breath and you need to go see this doctor because he saved my life. So I went to the doctor it was emergency. The guy told me, listen, I'm going to give you some medication, but when you take it, don't run after. So anyways, I couldn't understand the point. He even said something I was going to say on TV, but he basically injected me with a lot of strong drugs. And I fell asleep. The next day when I woke up, then I realized I was just tracking the clock because every night I was doing 20 hours. And it had been 11 hours since I entered the hospital. So I figured that it had to be a short sleep. So for me, I was just celebrant to actually have slept less than 20 hours. That was like a big milestone in my head. And the guy comes and then he's like, listen, look at these pictures. This was my lungs. So one of my lung, 1/5 of the space was gone. The other one, like 2/5 was gone. And it was like going towards 3/5.
This was COVID.
COVID. So he was telling me that if he had stayed an extra day, he wouldn't have not made it to ER. So I've given you something that's going to reverse the trend and going to reconstitute this, but it's going to give you a lot of energy. You need to promise me to not go run marathon or do funny business. And literally that was very prescient, because when I went back to my hotel, like every morning I'll wake up and I'll do like 100 push-ups because I have just this
energy
and I would have to stop. But all about me would be to do more, because I just have this. But I just stayed for a week. And it's during that time when I realized that, you know, I almost died.
Mm.
And when that hits you, you kind of have like a replay of your life, of what you've done, even if it's great, and how it's insufficient for what you could do. Like, regrets become very tangible. And also, you know, you kind of see some inflection point in your past where there's things you could have done differently. And you're like, you know what? There's no reason why I'm not doing it.
Interesting.
There's no reason why I'm restricting. I think every humans, we are bound to restrict ourselves.
Yeah.
And we are bound to interrupt ourselves. So actually, the piece I shared with you this week, our chairman's note this year, we called it Stay Uninterrupted. Because, you know, a lot of things, two things we tend to see to the founders we work closely with is, what is the version of you uninterrupted? It's one first question we always should ask ourselves. Because a lot of time we get distracted by the noise.
Yeah.
So Dangote not finishing his refinery is distraction. Maybe it's bad that it's not you, but let's have one. But interruption is the biggest killer that stops things. And the second one is, you just need to stay alive long enough to be lucky. So anything you really think is achievable and will make someone else happy by your doing, if you think it's worth your energy and your passion, you can do it. But there's going to be voices. There's going to be interruption. But the reality is, humans, we are designed, if you think about all the prophets we've known, they've all done miracles. Miracles, like you've read the Bible, we've read the Quran. Miracle galore. They didn't come with like a drone to do it. It's the human that did. So the capacity of a human to do incredible thing is documented in your lifetime. You will see it. We spend our time reading about all these humans doing phenomenal things. Unfortunately, it's heavily skewed towards money. So if you think about it, we've just really gone from a species that used to value people that did things beneficial for other humans to now the 100 richest guy.
Yeah.
So that's the proxy now, where, you know, wealth now becomes an excuse to do the most immoral thing.
Yeah.
Where people are having debate about things that are obvious because the metric has changed. But fundamentally, the capacity of humans for what they're doing in terms of wealth creation, you were about to get the first trillionaire. I think all of us can do, there's no limit to what we can do. It's always your neighbor, your family, your friend that will plant doubt. So if there's something you want to do, This is not what I tell my kids or people under 20, but I think in the past, in your 20s, find a superpower, find something you are good at, and find something where you don't see the time go. The biggest secret is that, to not see the time go. Some people call it passion, some people call it you, but that is the metric. It's because of X or Y reason, time is not accounted, cost is not accounted. You are a superhuman. Everybody else is seeing that as time. Everybody is seeing it at cost. Everybody is seeing it at effort. For you, your system is not recording it as a cost. It's just you doing what you really love. So when you're on that trail, the chances of you doing a massive failure exist, but it's quite limited because you are probably the one individual that's willing to meet as many hours in that journey. Nobody else is interested. Mm. And when you listen to some of these tech billionaires, you can see the common tissue being find a secret nobody knows, a tunnel nobody goes to, you have a monopoly, you're competing only with yourself. Because the toughest thing is having competitors. When you're like 10 copycats doing the same, it's tough. Because maybe the cheese is small. And then when you arrive at the end of the journey, you're looking at yourself. You all kill yourself. The cheese is standing.
Yeah. No, you know, I identified with this. And I told you, I had COVID too in Rwanda. And I had my come to Jesus moment there.
True.
So it's disgusting. There were nothing like those hallucinations. I remember spending hours in bed and the same thought process. You just see time go by. And I remember just saying to God, if you get me out of here, if you get me out of this position, I'm not going to be the same person anymore, you know, so I could definitely relate. I wanted us to, as we round up, Mono, the Mono deal just got announced. They got acquired by Flutterwave. I believe it was an all-stock deal for about, what was announced publicly was about $30 million, right? Now, for our audience who's, again, trying to make sense of these acquisitions, right? Again, some acquisitions get done with cash, some get done with stocks, some get done with a combination of both, right? I think Mono was a YC company, Flutterwave was a YC company. This is one of the first exits where another YC company in Africa, I believe, is buying another YC company. Can you demystify this whole all-stock deal acquisition, especially for our viewers who might not be familiar with what that looks like? So Flutterwave acquires Mono, but it's an all-stock deal where I believe the Mono investors get stock in Flutterwave. So Flutterwave, can you demystify that for our viewers?
Yes, sure. So that type of transaction happens a lot. I think the largest M&A of last year's was Maxab and the company in Kenya. So the two of them,
Wasoko
merge. And that was also around a lot of share swap. And this one is the same. For us, it's lucky because both companies are direct exposures we're in. So it's fundamentally us. We used to have shares in two companies. Now the shares of this company give us more shares in the other company. The team of Mono gets integrated under Flutterwave. They will keep the brand, but they will use their secret sauce that they will disseminate across Flutterwave, which is a platform that is in many more countries with regulatory license. Mono was only operating in three countries and would have had to do the journey of getting
all the licenses, license,
yeah, all the wahala, all the drama, and then maybe you don't work. Now suddenly you're a part of this big machine. And boom, your revenue expansion, your only job is to use all these license and paste that solution in different places. And the industry they operate in, there was only 2 to 3 players. One was linked to Switch, the other one shut down. So they fundamentally, in this area, one of the only players. So that would significantly enhance some of the subsequent value that materialize in Flutterwave. So fundamentally, most of the investors become investors in Flutterwave. So that's really the big gain in that story. And I would argue this is going to happen a lot more. It needs to happen a lot more Because when you think about the ramification of mergers, we all have witnessed in our lifetime many. So just imagine that where both you and our platform reside, which is YouTube, that's what it was, right? It was a company created by a bunch of guys, and today is part of the top three biggest company in the world. And the revenue it makes monthly
is crazy.
Is bigger, is a multiple of what Google paid to buy that company. To the point that if you took YouTube out, it could be one of the 100 most valuable companies in the world.
It's crazy.
So you can be sure that this is this type of transaction that we've, a few more we know is Facebook.
Instagram.
I never go to Facebook anymore. I started my journey, social media and Facebook. Yet, I'm still on Facebook because we don't escape WhatsApp.
Or Instagram.
Or Instagram. I don't know if there's... Now they've created this...
Threads.
Thing, threads.
Threads, yeah.
So they're like, my friend, you are not escaping me. I don't know which style
I'm
you like.
Be with you.
If you want Agbada, I have it. If you like shorts, I have it. If you have hat, I have it.
Yeah.
You're staying with me.
Yeah.
So that's fundamentally what platform. So for us, it's a good news. It's like a biggest, a second big news of this beginning of the year. And we're going to be happier because it stays within the portfolio. A lot of time we try to architect that ourselves. So this one, we're not taking any credit. We've seen that before. We've done that in the past. And we expect that as things change, we all win together.
We created the Afropolitan podcast because we wanted to make sure we tell the stories of those who came before us and those who are coming in front of us.
Our stories deserve to be documented and remembered.
And over here at Afropolitan, our drink of choice is Inveroche, which is a gin from South Africa because we believe African brands are global. So Eche, what are you toasting to?
To our builders, our innovators, to show that Black brilliance exists worldwide.
I am toasting to African creativity. I feel like the world is just blossoming with beautiful African storytellers.
Here's to legacy.
And stories worth sharing.
So babes, I'm always talking to you about investing. How's your journey going so far?
It started because you've been on my head for the past 6 months about investing, and you'll be proud of me because I actually found an app I love. It's called RiseVest. And actually what I love about it is that you can start with $10 and it automates everything for you. So literally I just go to the app and literally it's investing for me every single day.
Yeah, because we know you're not going to be a trader anytime soon. But with RiseVest, you're going to be able to invest in US stocks, right? Fixed income, real estate, etc. Right? And so I'm happy you're finally on board.
And you know, the funny thing too is I always tell my girls that as women, we're not investing enough, we're not talking about it, and we're not having these conversations. So I shared it in all my group chats. So you can find RiseVest on the Apple and Google Play Store.
Okay. Make sure to use code Afropolitan so that they know that we sent you. You know how every week we sit down with people who've done it, people who've built, people who've led movements, people who've created culture. What if you could do more than just listen to them? That is why we built Convo by Afropolitan. On Convo, you're able to book one-on-one video calls with in-demand experts from Africa and the diaspora. Go to convo.vip to get access to your next mentor, because sometimes one convo can change your entire path.
So I want to now switch to our rapid fire questions, right? Mm-hmm. So the first thing that comes to mind, I want you to share. Right. So first thing I want you to share is your favorite African food.
My favorite African food. So as a Senegalese,
yes,
that's come from the land of jollof, I'm not going to make some choices that create wahala. But genuinely, my favorite African food is a meal called yassa. It's
With the onions.
For me, you know, people fight over
jollof.
The yassa has always been my...
Have you had a yassa at Alara? Knock by Alara?
Is there a yassa there.
Yes.
Is there Senegalese food here? Like, I really...
Yes. So that's a good place to find Senegalese food, because Tunde and his wife, when they set it up, they took a Senegalese friend of mine who's one of the biggest chefs in New York. He's the one that actually
set it up.
No wonder. So he's inside the menu. There's a plurality of countries, Malian, Nigerian.
Yeah, yeah.
but there's definitely a significant Senegalese emphasis. So the cook at present may not do it pronto, pronto, exactamente, like it has to be, but...
I always get a yassa when I go there.
Yeah, yeah, the yassa is good there.
Okay.
But to get the best, you need to come and spend the money.
In Dakar.
In Dakar.
I know, we need to go back. Actually, it's a country I really enjoy. It's so beautiful. What's your favorite country to visit, actually? Outside of your own.
So, yes. So, I've been in 40 plus African cities, but... So I'll pick one for Africa because I'm always trying to fight for Africa. So outside of Dakar and Lagos, where from belonging and roots, I have to put a flag. I think one underestimated city, an incredible city, is Kigali.
Yeah.
And then one, I think, that will win constantly on the global stage, even outside of Africa ranking, will be Cape Town.
Yeah.
Cape Town will just continue to be a phenomenal city for wherever you come from. So from a personal standpoint, but I think it's one of those cities where if you're taking someone somewhere, the amount of anticipation of drama, of worry you have disappears. And that's a metric or a signal of value. Because, you know, I'll take people home, I'll take them Lego any place. I'll always feel like there's some liability that may pop up.
Yep.
I mean, we did see the biggest champion of boxing show up for vacation.
And
an unfortunate thing comes. So that's like, for me, those are the worst. Because if your commitment, like you guys, we have a media platform in Africa, narrative is important.
Exactly.
Correcting the misperception is important. So for me, every time I have someone not from the continent, I want perfection to happen. Because, you know, so I would say Cape Town wins it because it's one of the places where literally you could take someone and disappear. And the person will still be super happy. Mm. So I think there's many reason to that, and hopefully we can go get more cities. Kigali is doing a very good job at that level, and I think slowly more of our cities will do the same. But you guys been to Cairo, so
we'll
spend some time, and you guys visited. So I think Egypt is another place I love.
El Gona.
I think
I love that.
It definitely needs because of the historical. You guys saw the history. And also I'm a big fan of religion. So the abundance of profit linked to that geography. And I think Africa as a whole, there's just a lot that has happened there that I think there's been some media effort on editing since we are all in the editing business at time.
It's a business.
I think the editing post-edit has been massive in a lot of places. Yeah. I mean, think about the fact that the guy that created Judaism came from Egypt.
Yeah.
It was called Moses.
Yes.
So there should be a role. The person that built the Kaaba in Mecca is actually Abraham, my namesake, and his son, Ishmael. So just think about how bizarre the world is.
It's connected.
How it's connected to that random place that has pyramid, that has former slaves, that is linked to a next door country called Sudan that has more pyramid. There's an army of things that thing we'll never know.
Yeah.
I think the simplest thing, I tell people that the simplest thing, vision of paradise I have is that you die if you're elected to go to hell. It's not necessarily fire. It's just like a black screen. Mm. Paradise is just God or the universe giving you a download of every question you've ever had in one split.
Mm.
There's nothing that can be better than that. All these places where you have doubt or questions. Imagine if there's an app that gives you the entire story of humanity pre-Big Bang. Because Big Bang is the laziest scientific
explanation
of things. It's like, Oh yeah, I've tried, man. I've given you 5,000 years of explanation. This one, that's where it starts. So imagine getting in one go. You don't need anything. You will not need money. You will not need anything. That's all as human. That's the most divine posture you can have. There's nothing that puzzles you.
I do have one rapid fire question. Middle Eastern LPs versus Western LPs. Obviously, you don't have to go into specifics, but what do you appreciate about the differences between both?
I think the Middle Eastern LPs are a bit similar to us. It takes a bit more time, but they cultivate relationship. You will drink a lot of tea, coffee, shisha before you land. But once you land,
it's
solid.
It's solid, but it takes some time. The Western, so I would say the Western, I would put them in two buckets. There's a bucket of the purely commercial, pure capitalist. I want to make money, money, money. He's very clear. If he doesn't want to do business with you, he'll tell you no. If he doesn't want to talk to you, he'll ghost you. But then I think that the challenge African PE and VC, haven't been in the game as a hedge fund person, PE person, and now a VC person. The tough part that exists on the continent is the biggest provider of capital are DFIs. And all DFIs, you know, take their time. So if you're in a fast game, if your main solution being DFI is, you know, you kind of have to be very patient because most of these people raise funds over 4 years. People tend to only see the end of it, the announcement of the exit, the announcement of this.
And to be honest, it's also why I have a bias against, not to say I don't support the EFIs, but anytime somebody comes to talk to me about, oh, let's go talk to this DFI or this, I'm like, listen, man, I don't have 1 year to wait. So
if they have money to grant you,
sure.
Take it. I mean, we're in the same journey at that space. For us, we want to collaborate more with you guys, really want to, as we develop our tech and pass a certain stage, partner with more media platform like you guys. Because fundamentally, we think that the big part of the journey is having more vehicles like that, handling the editing. Because it's actually counter editing we're doing. Because basically there's thousands of years of flawed narrative that's engineered. You can be sure that it's not accidental that Tarzan lands in Africa and teach the animal pick Tarzan to teach their language and skip every African across the village. Like that is one of the biggest, there's so many of those. And that is as a baby. So imagine all babies, even us, we've seen it, but it doesn't hit your head. But you have accepted that, wow, man, even the monkeys don't want to teach us their language. When the white man shows up, they adopt him. So imagine, there's plenty of, you know how many African boys were hanging out in that village? They did not adopt one until Tarzan landed. Mowgli, same thing. So the amount of editing that has been
post-editing.
Done.
Post-editing.
So we have, our duty collectively is post-editing. So I would argue the work you guys are doing, the work we're doing, ours is more restricted because we are biased towards our portfolio. You guys are going wide and large. And as the viewership, the loyalty is built around what I've discussed here is really trying to route truths to our people, but truth outside the market. Because fundamentally, if we don't do it, nobody else is going to do it. But you can suspect that if others are spending time to distort reality, maybe there's a truth that a lot of people need to hear. And I think, you know, the biggest mission we need to impose on ourselves, stop talking about Africa potential. There's no such thing. Africa has been actual forever. People have landed, collected, tried to impose things on us.
Collecting.
Keep collecting. So if it was potential, you
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here? What are you doing here?
I love it. I love it.
Such thing. So we need to force ourselves. Yes. Kill that story.
Yes, I love it. So the last question we ask every single guest on the Afropolitan podcast is, who do you want to see in that chair and whose story needs to be told?
I think the one I would suggest you have in the chair is definitely the founders of MOVE. Obviously, the level of our adoration is unlimited with them. So I think the two of them we get will be great. Laddie, we just had him at FII and we recorded the podcast there. I think that was the first time he was telling his story, and it was the largest event ever on the globe today. And he gave the full story and people really espouse it. I think it's important to have him here because from a son of the soil, to see what they have achieved, the great things they're doing that I can't disclose, but you're going to hear on the news, I would argue it's going to be the biggest story of 2026 by far. And they're very humble guys that really are, I think, what we need to see over the next 10 to 20 years. Another one I would recommend is LemFi.
Okay.
Very similar story because they're really going buying. I mean, the core of that story is all of us. I mean, I'm older than you guys, but I can see clearly in my head the amount of money I've dashed to MoneyGram and Western Union in my 30 years life of career. Sending money to my parents, my siblings. I mean, so now obviously there's Venmo in many other ways. But I remember when early in my career, when I was sending like $2,000 to my family, not that my family needed, but we, you know, tradition of sending money at home, you know, you'll have like fundamentally almost 20% of that amount.
They will.
So imagine monthly when you do the addition of that, it's crazy. So what you have today with companies like LemFi is actually someone from our stores, from our soils, second act again, because you know those guys were here in OPE. Yeah. If you look at all the best performing in our top 15 companies where we're directly, like not one of them
is
the first act. Yeah. Mm. Like you guys are not the first act, as you know.
Definitely not.
This is superpower in second act. And ourselves as a firm, we are a second act because the entire management team, we've worked together before in a different setting. It is all of us were like, you know what, this time, this second act, it's fun.
Yeah.
So literally the people that have that in them are different people.
Yeah. Mm.
They do something differently. And I think whether you get Laddie or you get the LemFi guys, the story that needs to be told more is that we don't need to restrain ourselves to our market.
Mm-hmm.
We should be unapologetic.
Uninterrupted.
There's no reason why a company comes from another geography lens and that gymnastic is something you prevent yourself for. So I think the more of that happening, those stories will change a large segment of the future kids. Because the benefit of the future kid is my own daughter that's 19 now came to catch us in our living room when we're watching when Trump became president the first time.
Mm.
And her what was puzzled in her young mind was why we're watching all these blonde guys trying to take Obama's job. Like, they're the one that's going to replace him. And because she was under 8, she was like, but they can't get his job. They're not brown. So in her head, the president of the U.S., has to be a black person.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of mental restriction we grew up with that this generation doesn't have. Kids younger than her were born when there was an Indian guy running the UK.
Yeah.
So you can see that some of these episodes, the more you see it, it's a healthy start.
Yeah.
Because the mental slavery a lot of previous generations suffer from, from the edit that we need to post edit is massive.
Yeah.
So we have a big duty on the media side to just make people see more. I mean, Nigeria has a lot more than than Femi, Aliko.
Yeah, exactly.
There's so many of those stories. And we need to get our youth to see it and there.
Yes. Because
the reality is there's unlimited potential in all of us. Unlimited power. So definitely suggest those two.
Okay.
Ibrahim, thank you so much.
Thanks for the gift of your time, guys.
Well, thank you.